Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open our show with some dramatic sound bites from the Senate Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2020 insurrection. You'll hear compelling evidence that Donald Trump's top legal advisors, including the Attorney General, told him he had lost the election and that fraud claims were false. Yet Trump gloated while watching the violent assault on the Capitol on TV by his supporters, and he refused to take any action at all to halt the attack on the Capitol for hours, even voicing support for the mob and stating that Mike Pence deserved to be hanged. Next up, we'll tell you how to find cool zones as the weather heats up and fire weather sweeps into our region. Then we'll have results of the primary elections for key races in East County, including Congress, State Senate, and Assembly races, County Supervisor, and the latest on the County Sheriff's race. COVID-19 has forced many engaged couples to delay their weddings, and the cost of a wedding attire can be costly. So the Goodwill store in La Mesa is having a special event offering gently worn wedding wear and even some brand new wedding gowns with the tags still on them, and we'll have the tales. A fire safety fair is coming up in Rancho San Diego to help you stay safe this fire season. A health alert has been issued over a hepatitis A outbreak linked to organic fresh strawberries. Find out what you need to know to stay safe on today's show. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including gun violence protests across the nation after the Uvalde, Texas shooting, additional details on the January 6th hearings, and more. From California News Service, hear how the pandemic has disrupted college plans for many college seniors. Plus, learn about funds to help small businesses in the proposed state budget. San Diego State Senator Tony Atkins has introduced a constitutional amendment to protect women's access to abortion and birth control in our state, and we'll have details. Then, we'll take you on the road to the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College, one of East County's hidden treasures. And finally, we'll have news on improved fire protection for our region, thanks to a brand new fire station high atop Mount Laguna. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. The Senate Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol made several shocking revelations during its first public hearing televised in prime time on June 9th. Chairman Benny Thompson, a Democrat, made clear that former President Donald Trump knew full well that the election was not stolen. He provided proof, playing video of Trump's Attorney General, Bill Barr, stating he repeatedly told Trump that there was no evidence of election fraud.
Donald Trump lost the presidential election in 2020. The American people voted him out of office. It was not because of a rigged system. It was not because of voter fraud. Don't believe me? Hear what his former Attorney General had to say about it. I warn those who watching that this contains strong language.
I had three discussions with the president that I can recall. One was on November 23rd, one was on December 1st, and one was on December 14th. And I've been through sort of the give and take of those discussions. And in that context, I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit. And, you know, I didn't want to be a part of it. And that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did. I observed, I think it was on December 1st, that, you know, how can we, you can't live in a world where the incumbent administration stays in power based on its view, unsupported by specific evidence, that the election, that there was fraud in the election.
Bill Barr, on Election Day 2020, he was the Attorney General of the United States, the top law enforcement official in the country, telling the president exactly what he thought about claims of a stolen election. Donald Trump had his days in court to challenge the results. He was within his rights to seek those judgments. In the United States, law-abiding citizens have those tools for pursuing justice. He lost in the courts, just as he did at the ballot box. And in this country, that's the end of the line. But for Donald Trump, that was only the beginning of what became a sprawling, multi-step conspiracy aimed at overturning the presidential election.
Thompson said the committee will prove that Trump organized a coup in an attempt to violently overthrow the U.S. government, then introduced ranking Republican Liz Cheney, who provided additional evidence that Trump knew full well his stolen election claims were false. Top campaign advisors to the president also counseled him that he had lost the election, and 62 judges, including some appointed by Trump, found no evidence of fraud. Even Trump's own daughter, Ivanka Trump, told the Select Committee that she believed Attorney General Barr.
Alex Cannon was one of President Trump's campaign lawyers. He previously worked for the Trump Organization. One of his responsibilities was to assess allegations of election fraud in November 2020. Here is one sample of his testimony discussing what he told White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
I remember a call with Mr. Meadows, where Mr. Meadows was asking me what I was finding and if I was finding anything. And I remember sharing with him that we weren't finding anything that would be sufficient to change the results in any of the key states.
When was that conversation?
Probably in November, mid to late November. I think it was before my child was born.
And what was Mr. Meadows' reaction to that information?
I believe the words he used were, so there's no there there.
There's no there there. The Trump campaign's general counsel, Matt Morgan, gave similar testimony. He explained that all of the fraud allegations and the campaign's other election arguments, taken together and viewed in the best possible light for President Trump, could still not change the outcome of the election. President Trump's Attorney General Bill Barr also told Donald Trump his election claims were wrong.
Repeatedly told the president in no uncertain terms that I did not see evidence of fraud and that would have affected the outcome of the election. And frankly, a year and a half later, I haven't seen anything to change my mind on that.
Attorney General Barr also told President Trump that his allegations about Dominion voting machines were groundless.
I saw absolutely zero basis for the allegations, but they were made in such a sensational way that they obviously were influencing a lot of people, members of the public, that there was this systemic corruption in the system and that their votes didn't count and that these machines controlled by somebody else were actually determining it, which was complete nonsense. And it was being laid out there. And I told them that it was crazy stuff and they were wasting their time on that. And it was doing a great, grave disservice to the country.
But President Trump persisted, repeating the false Dominion allegations in public at least a dozen more times, even after his attorney general told him they were, quote, complete nonsense. And after Barr's resignation on December 23rd, the acting attorney general who replaced him, Jeff Rosen, and the acting deputy, Richard Donahue, told President Trump over and over again that the evidence did not support allegations he was making in public. Many of President Trump's White House staff also recognized that the evidence did not support the claims President Trump was making. This is the president's daughter commenting on Bill Barr's statement that the department found no fraud sufficient to overturn the election.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he was saying.
Cheney contends that Trump oversaw a 7-part plan to overturn the 2020 election. A committee source told CNN that the 7 steps specifically were spreading false information claiming the election was stolen when he knew this was not true, After Barr refused to take part in false election claims and resigned, Trump tried to replace him with an acting attorney general who would support the false election claims. Trump corruptly pressured Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to count certified electoral votes, which the Constitution required him to do. Trump also pushed his legal team in multiple states to create false electoral slates to send to Congress. And he summoned a violent mob, directing them to march to the Capitol and use force. He ignored multiple pleas for help for hours while the violence was underway, and he was watching it on TV, gloating over the images of carnage, and said he thought Mike Pence deserved to be hanged, as the protesters were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." In his Capitol Ellipse speech earlier that morning, Trump repeatedly demanded that Pence should halt the vote count.
If Mike Pence does the right thing, we win the election. All Vice President Pence has to do is send it back to the states to recertify, and we become president, and you are the happiest people. Mike Pence is going to have to come through for us, and if he doesn't, that will be a sad day for our country, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength, and you have to be strong.
Cruiser 50, it does look like we're going to have an ad hoc march.
The violence that day killed 5 people and injured 140 police officers. Yet witnesses told the committee that Trump appeared to relish the violence, stating that his followers who violently stormed the Capitol, assaulting and killing people, were doing the right thing. For several hours, Trump made no effort to stop the violence. He ignored all pleas for help and did not contact his Secretary of Defense or anybody else to try to stop the assault. Here's what Liz Cheney had to say on that.
Not only did President Trump refuse to tell the mob to leave the Capitol, he placed no call to any element of the United States government to instruct that the Capitol be defended. He did not call his Secretary of Defense on January 6th. He did not talk to his Attorney General. He did not talk to the Department of Homeland Security. President Trump gave no order to deploy the National Guard that day, and he made no effort to work with the Department of Justice to coordinate and deploy law enforcement assets. But Vice President Pence did each of those things.
The committee played a disturbing video with footage never before seen publicly, including aerial security footage showing the size of the violent mob. It also included testimony and footage from a documentary filmmaker embedded with the Proud Boys, which, along with the Oath Keepers, has leaders now charged with seditious conspiracy. These are right-wing and, in one case, a white supremacist group. Leaders of these groups met the night before the attack in a parking garage and were seen at the Capitol surveilling the area while Trump was speaking. Trump later instructed the crowd to go to the exact area where the far-right groups were waiting, an area where security at the Capitol was weakest. Here is a clip of police officers being attacked as the mob broke through the line, and warning, this is difficult to listen to.
We need to hold the doors of the Capitol! I need Pence support. We lost the line. We lost the line.
Among the most disturbing testimony was that of Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who was knocked unconscious and remains out of work due to a traumatic brain injury. Yet after she regained consciousness, she continued battling to protect the Capitol, slipping in people's blood while working alongside another police officer who sustained injuries and later died.
After a while, I got back on the line. It was on the house side of the Lower West Terrace. And I was holding that line for a while. There weren't many of us over there. And Officer Sicknick was behind me for most of the time, for about 30 to 45 minutes that I was down there. We were just, as the best we could, we were just, you know, grappling over bike racks and trying to hold them as quick as possible. All of a sudden, I see movement to the left of me, And I turned, and it was Officer Sicknick with his head in his hands. And he was ghostly pale, which I figured at that point that he had been sprayed, and I was concerned. My, cop alarm bells went off, because if you get sprayed with pepper spray, you're going to turn red. He turned just about as pale as this sheet of paper. And so I looked back to see what had hit him, what had happened, and that's when I got sprayed in the eyes as well. I was taken to be decontaminated by another officer, but we didn't get the chance because we were then tear gassed. When I fell behind that line and I saw, I can just remember my breath catching in my throat, because what I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I'd seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground, they were bleeding, they were throwing up, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos. I can't even describe what I saw. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that as a police officer, as a law enforcement officer, I would find myself in the middle of a battle. I'm trained to detain, a couple of subjects and handle a crowd, but I'm not combat trained. And that day, it was just hours of hand-to-hand combat, hours of dealing with things that were way beyond any law enforcement officer has ever trained for. And I just remember that moment of stepping behind the line and just seeing the absolute war zone that the West Front had become.
While some witnesses cooperated with the committee, including key Trump insiders, others refused, and two have been found in contempt, including former Trump advisor Steve Bannon. Another who refused to testify was Representative Scott Perry, who reportedly pressured Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, to implement the plan to spread doubts about the election outcome. Cheney revealed,
"As you will see, Representative Perry contacted the White House in the weeks after January 6th to seek a presidential pardon. Multiple other Republican congressmen also sought presidential pardons for their roles in attempting to overturn the 2020 election."
Perry, by contrast, denigrated the work of the committee this way.
"Madam Speaker, this is not a court of law, but it's kind of like trying to be one in front of the public, trying to act like it's a court of law for the public to decide. It's a show trial. This is a Soviet-style show trial."
The hearing was broadcast live on CBS, NBC, ABC, NPR, PBS, and C-SPAN. All of the major networks, in fact, except Fox News. While the hearings were airing on its competitive stations, Fox ran commentary by conservative talk show host Tucker Carlson without commercials in order to discourage its viewers from changing the channel and perhaps viewing some of the hearing. Representative Cheney had strong words for her fellow Republicans choosing to turn a blind eye to the increasingly damning truths being revealed by the committee after it's interviewed more than 1,000 witnesses and reviewed over 100,000 pages of documents. The daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, a staunch conservative, stated, "Tonight, I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
As the weather warms up, the County of San Diego has kicked off its 2022 Cool Zones program to help local residents beat the heat this summer. Cool Zones are free, air-conditioned locations available throughout the region where people can go to escape extreme temperatures. A list of Cool Zone locations is online at coolzones.org. The site includes a map where you can enter your address to find the nearest Cool Zone, or you can call 211 to find a location. San Diegans who are unable to get to a Cool Zone on their own can call 211 to request transportation to a location free of charge. Excessive heat can be particularly dangerous for seniors and children, so the county advises them to seek shelter in cool locations when temperatures rise. Working or exercising outside on a hot day, or staying in an overheated place for too long, can cause heat-related illnesses, including cramps, exhaustion, and heat stroke. An extremely high body temperature of 103 degrees or higher, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache are all signs of heat stroke or exhaustion. If someone shows these signs, call 911 and begin cooling the person immediately. In addition to Cool Zones, the county, in partnership with San Diego Gas and Electric, provides free electric fans to San Diegans who are living on limited incomes. To be eligible for the fan program, a county resident must not have access to an air-conditioned space at their home or apartment building. To learn more about the Cool Zones fan program or to request a fan, call 211. Again, that website for more information on the Cool Zones program, as well as tips to stay cool at home, is coolzones.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with some updates on East County primary election returns, with about 21.5% of the votes counted as of our show taping deadline. Stephen Houlihan, a nurse and former Santee councilman with a master's in business administration degree, is heading for a runoff election against Congressman Daryl Issa in November. Issa, a Republican, has a hefty lead with 59% of the vote over Houlihan at 28%. Two other candidates, Democrat Matthew Raisin and no-party candidate Lucinda John, pulled 10% and 2%, respectively. Issa has been an outspoken critic of the Biden administration and has a solid conservative voting record. Houlihan has been critical of Issa for voting against COVID relief funds for businesses, yet accepting six figures in relief funding for his own company. Issa signed a brief urging the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. The High Court is now poised to do just that, allowing states to ban abortions even to save the life of a mother or for rape, according to a leaked decision. Houlihan says he supports a woman's right to choose, by contrast. Issa has said his top priorities are safety of communities, economic opportunities for working people, border security, and protecting freedoms. He has slammed the Biden administration over inflation and the economy. Houlihan cites his MBA degree as qualification to address economic issues and says he wants to help small businesses. Houlihan also wants to expand Medicare to allow access at age 55 instead of 65 to help seniors reduce health care premium costs. Now, Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a Democrat, received over 60% of the vote in the primary election in her district. She will run off on November 8th against Stan Kaplan, a small business owner who received just under 38% of the vote. Peace and Freedom candidate Jose Cortez received less than 2%, and Barrett Holman Leek received just 12 votes total, less than 0.01%. Congresswoman Jacobs has served in the U.S. State Department, UNICEF, and the United Nations before winning election to Congress in 2020. She has fought to fund child care and help military families, as well as small businesses during the pandemic to get COVID funding relief. The cost of living is a key issue for Jacobs, who wants to help constituents hurt by rising gas prices and the high cost of living, rent, and health care. Kaplan wants to eliminate deficit spending, support law enforcement, reduce income taxes, and provide parents with choices in where to educate their children. The newly redrawn 51st Congressional District that they're running in includes the cities of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and El Cajon, as well as unincorporated communities of Spring Valley and La Presa in East County, in addition to some San Diego neighborhoods. Supervisor Nathan Fletcher will face off against conservative Amy Reichardt in the November general election to represent District 4. Part of what used to be Joel Anderson's district is now in Nathan Fletcher's redrawn district, including La Mesa, Spring Valley, and Rancho San Diego here in East County, as well as parts of San Diego. With 21% of the votes counted, Fletcher has about 64% of the vote and Reichardt has 27%. The third candidate in the race, Sadika Hooker, has 9%. Fletcher is chairman of the San Diego County Board of Supervisors and led the county during challenging times and the COVID-19 pandemic. He was reelected chair unanimously. He is endorsed by the County Democratic Party. He also chairs the San Diego Metropolitan Transit System and is vice chairman of the Regional Task Force on Homeless. He has led efforts to provide more affordable housing and has partnered with Republican Supervisor Joel Anderson to work toward creating homeless shelters and services in East County, as well as clearing homeless camps in a compassionate manner. Reichardt is co-owner of Reopen San Diego, which formed to advocate for reopening businesses and schools that were closed due to COVID-19. She has also led rallies to oppose vaccine mandates and masking requirements. She is endorsed by the County Republican Party. Next up, we've got some results in East County's key legislative races. In Assembly District 75, redistricting has pitted two Republican incumbents forced to run against each other. Marie Waldron has a commanding lead over Randy Vopel, 63% to 37%. No Democrat filed to run. The pair will square off again in November, but Vopel faces an uphill battle and appears poised to lose his seat. In District 79, incumbent Democrat Akilah Weber has over two-thirds of the vote, 64%. She will face off against Republican Corbin Sable, who drew 24% of the vote, defeating John Moore, who got less than 12%. Weber is a medical doctor and former La Mesa council member who has made health care a priority, authoring the Patient Protection Act, the Saving Lives in Custody Act, and the CARE Act to protect access to abortion and birth control for low-income women. She has also called for action to stop gun violence. Sable is a civilian contractor and former Navy officer. He has criticized COVID lockdowns and believes there has been too much emphasis on public health. He wants to cut taxes and opposes gun control. State Senator Brian Jones faces a challenge from Joseph Rocha, a Navy veteran and former Marine Corps prosecutor. Jones, a Republican, has 53% of the vote and Rocha has 46%, just a 9-point difference there, but the pair will face off again in the November general election. The 40th State Senate District is vast. In East County, it includes Santee and most of the unincorporated mountain and rural communities as well. On his website, Jones says government is failing us. His priorities include lowering taxes and housing costs, supporting compassionate solutions to clear homeless camps, and improving public safety. Jones' recent legislation includes measures that aim to reduce catalytic converter thefts and make it harder for the state to place sexually violent predators in communities. Rocha says his priorities are kitchen table issues, including creating jobs, providing first-time homeowners and renters with access to affordable housing, lowering utility and gas prices, helping veterans, and addressing climate change. Countywide, the race to fill the vacancy left by the retirement of Sheriff Bill Gore is the most closely watched contest. Undersheriff Kelly Martinez has 38% of the vote in the seven-candidate field, but the battle for second place and a spot in the November runoff still remains somewhat close. John Hemmerling, a retired prosecutor, police officer, and ex-Marine, has 20.4% of the votes, followed by Dave Myers, a retired sheriff's commander, with 17.8%. The remaining candidates each have single digits. Key issues in the race include reducing the high number of deaths in county jails, recruiting and retaining staff, reducing crime and recidivism. Martinez, a Democrat, has the endorsement of former Sheriff Bill Gore and the San Diego County Gun Owners Association. If elected in November, Martinez would be the first woman to lead the sheriff's department. She says she is committed to improving public safety, reducing jail deaths, and addressing critical staffing shortages. Hemmerling has pledged to reduce violent crime and improve morale and retention in the sheriff's department. He is endorsed by the Republican Party. Myers, who trails the others, is endorsed by the state and county Democratic Party. He's run as a reform candidate focused on restoring trust in policing and reducing jail deaths.
Climate change has been fueling larger and more severe wildfires in California in recent years. On June 12th, the Rancho Helix de Oro Fire Safety Council is sponsoring a fire safety education fair to help area residents prevent and prepare for devastating wildfires. The fair will be held from 1:30 to 4 p.m. at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego. Presentations by San Miguel Fire and Rescue, CAL FIRE, and the American Red Cross will begin at 2 p.m. Guests can ask questions of the presenters, pick up fire safety information materials, view displays, and bring the kids to see fire trucks at the family-friendly event. The Rancho Helix de Oro Fire Safety Council's community education focuses on defensible space, brush cleaning, structural hardening, vents, roofing, emergency alert systems, and smoke alarms. The organization's past president, Kathleen Hedberg, says, "As we move into our summer season, it is critical for us to learn and act now on how we can mitigate the danger at home and prepare ourselves for a wildfire." She also urges residents to help make a difference by building wildfire resiliency in our community. For more information on the June 12th Fire Safety Education Fair and how to protect your home from wildfires, you can visit helixfiresafety.com or call 619-660-7487. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Wedding attire can leave many betrothed couples with sticker shock. To help out, Goodwill's La Mesa Resale Store is hosting a special event offering wedding wear and bridal accessories on June 17th, 18th, and 19th. The sale will take place from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Goodwill's store at 8250 La Mesa Boulevard in downtown La Mesa. The event will include wedding gowns by brand-name designers, as well as dresses for bridesmaids, flower girls, and mothers of the bride. While most are secondhand, some donated bridal gowns are new, still with the original tags attached. There will also be jewelry, shoes, gloves, bow ties, tiaras, and wedding decor items. Now brides can be ready for their special day and save money that can be used for a honeymoon trip or setting up a household. Goodwill uses the revenue generated from the sale of donated goods at its retail stores, outlet centers, and online store to fund free job training programs and employment services. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson. This is Marie Johnson with a health alert. An outbreak of hepatitis A has been linked to fresh strawberries, including 15 cases in California. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is warning consumers, retailers, and restaurants not to eat, sell, or serve any fresh Campo or HEB brand organic strawberries purchased between March 5th and April 25th. If you've purchased these products or aren't sure what brand of strawberries are in your refrigerator or freezer, throw them out. If you ate these berries in the past 2 weeks and have not been vaccinated against hepatitis A, you should immediately consult your doctor to get vaccinated, which can prevent infection within 14 days of exposure. The strawberries were sold at major retailers in California and elsewhere in the U.S. and Canada, including Aldi, Kroger, Safeway, Sprouts, Trader Joe's, Walmart, and more. Illness usually occurs within 15 to 50 days after eating or drinking contaminated food or water. People with hepatitis A infections usually completely recover within 1 to 2 weeks. However, in rare cases, hepatitis A may become chronic, causing relapsing infection. Chronic hepatitis A infection can lead to more severe health problems, including liver failure and death. If you've eaten fresh Campo or HEB organic strawberries and have symptoms which range from nausea and fatigue to abdominal issues, contact your healthcare professional.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, I'm Mike Clifford. Americans concerned about gun violence are rallying this weekend to put pressure on lawmakers to pass gun safety measures in the wake of mass shootings in Uvalde, Texas, Buffalo, New York, and elsewhere. We head first to West Virginia.
On Thursday, the U.S. House passed a bill to nationalize red flag laws, allowing a court to temporarily block a person deemed to be a danger to themselves or others from purchasing firearms. President of the American Federation of Teachers in West Virginia, Fred Albert, says he's recently spoken with Democratic West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin and believes Manchin will take action on the issue.
He definitely supports doing something that is going to help, and what that something is, I guess they're debating that right now in Congress.
Earlier this week, the senator told CNN he would support raising the gun purchasing age to 21. The Giffords Law Center says West Virginia doesn't require residents to get a background check or a permit to carry a loaded concealed gun in public. In 2020, the Mountain State had the 14th highest gun death rate in the nation. Opponents of stricter gun safety laws argue they penalize law-abiding gun owners and don't reduce violent crime. The rally is at noon Saturday at the state capitol. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
And in Ohio, Michelle Dillingham with the Cincinnati Federation of Teachers says there is a unified call for reforms to address the public health crisis of gun violence.
This is not a celebration, right? This is traumatic. We are seeing an unacceptable level of gun violence on school grounds, traumatizing our youth and their families. And so this will march to compel lawmakers to make common sense gun reform.
And in New Hampshire, a high school sophomore, Arika Roy, is an organizer of the March for Our Lives rally that's going to happen in Nashua this Saturday.
Me personally, and just to most students in general, it's important for us to raise the gun owning age from 18 to 21 and just to enact stricter policies and enact background checks and whatnot.
Now from Reuters, the chairman of the congressional panel probing the deadly 2021 attack on the Capitol by Donald Trump supporters on Thursday opened the hearings into the causes of the violence by accusing the former president of being at the center of a conspiracy to thwart democracy. Democrat Benny Thompson, the committee's chair, said in an opening statement the violence was no accident, it was Trump's last stand. Republican Vice Chair Liz Cheney said the motivation for many involved in the attack was Trump's repeated debunked claims the election was stolen. This is PNS. Promoting the theme Unity in Community, the Hispanic Access Foundation has partnered with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to bring COVID-19 vaccine clinics to Latino churches in 3 Texas communities.
Ari Garcia is the secretary for Hope of Life Church of God in Houston. They want more people to either get vaccinated or, she says, at least get the right resources about the vaccines.
We've seen a lot of people that are still getting sick today. Even when they use the mask, people are still getting the virus. So I think it's important, and I tell them it's still around.
The Hope of Life Church of God in Houston is offering vaccination clinics every Wednesday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'm Roz Brown.
In addition to Texas, other clinics working to reach Latino families for COVID vaccinations are located in Arizona, Connecticut, Illinois, New Jersey, and Nevada. This Saturday, the Kansas City Local Investment Commission holds its first Caring Communities Day.
The goal is to provide resources to families from signups for weatherization programs to free smoke detectors. It's at the Morningstar Youth and Family Life Center, and local partner agencies and organizations include the fire and police departments, Evergy's Fire, and Kansas City Water Services. Janet Miles Barty with Blank hopes the event will bring awareness that pandemic resources are still available and that it'll be a time to come together and celebrate the community.
We will have Evergy there. We will be talking to people about rental assistance, just really all kind of resources. One of the things that have come up that there's a shortage of baby formula, and we're going to try to have some baby formula and some other baby needs there for families.
According to the Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey, more than 35% of Missouri residents still struggle to pay for usual household expenses. I'm Lee Bulkey reporting.
Finally, Jonah Chester lets us know Illinois taking steps to increase higher education opportunities for people across that state.
On Tuesday, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed two higher ed bills into law. One will create new support staff to help students find and get financial aid, and the other will compel schools to create equity plans to remove barriers for students from underrepresented communities. Emily Goldman with the Partnership for College Completion says the measures will help students stay enrolled once they enter college.
These bills really are about ensuring that Illinois students have access to the resources that they need to access and persist in college.
The Illinois Board of Higher Education reports the state's overall public university enrollment increased from 2019 to the most recent school year, although total enrollment for undergraduates alone dropped slightly in that time period.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A new survey of 28,000 high school seniors finds that more than one in four changed their life plans during the pandemic. In 2019, 25% of students planned to attend a two-year college. Now that's dropped to 19%. Jennifer Wilka with Youth Truth says the disruption was more pronounced for certain groups.
There were many, many more differences for Hispanic or Latinx students, Black or African American students, LGBTQ plus boys, and students attending high poverty schools.
Compared with 2019, fewer kids said they want to go to community college. More LGBTQ plus students said they considered dropping out, and more seniors said they are unsure of their next move. The survey found that financial stress played a big part, as did battles with anxiety and depression. Wilka says many students are weighed down by grief and struggled to adapt to distance learning.
It feels to them as if time has stopped. They have lost their study skills. A lot of them have lost focus, lost motivation, lost people that they cared about. So those absolutely are trends that come through loud and clear.
The survey found that fewer kids are connecting with school counselors these days to talk about college or financial aid. Wilka says she'd like states to better fund schools so they can beef up their counseling staff and offer more targeted interventions for groups of students that are having a hard time getting back on track. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Small business groups are celebrating the new budget deal reached between California state legislators. Next up comes final negotiations with Governor Gavin Newsom. The deal includes more than $1 billion to offset the cost of paid sick leave and help cover taxes on unemployment insurance. Carolina Martinez is CEO of Cameo, the California Association for Microenterprise Opportunities.
Small businesses still need capital and also technical assistance. So we are happy to see that the governor's office and also the legislators are committed to continue supporting the small businesses.
The budget must pass by June 15th and be signed into law by July 1st. The budget includes $50 million for the California Investment and Innovation Fund, $8 million for Women's Business Centers, and $500 million for the California Small Business Hard Hit Industries Grant Program. Luis Ramos is Director of Business Advising for Acción Opportunity Fund, a community development financial institution. He predicts the extra $50 million in funding means CDFIs will be able to shepherd many more budding entrepreneurs.
We can not only provide capital to these small businesses, but also nurture them in that whole process just to ensure that that capital is used efficiently, effectively.
The budget also includes $150 million for COVID-19 small business grants, $75 million for drought relief grants for small agricultural businesses in the state, and $1 billion to be distributed over 4 years by the California Energy Commission as grants to businesses headquartered in California. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. Emergencies can happen to anyone, anywhere, at any time. When you need to be quiet and making a phone call could place you in danger, you can now send a text to 911 in San Diego County. This life-saving service has been available countywide since January of 2021, which includes the San Diego County Sheriff's Department as well as all police, fire, and emergency medical service agencies countywide. Calling is still the fastest way to reach 911. Voice calls allow a dispatcher to more quickly ask questions and get information from the caller. When you're calling from a landline, the call taker will automatically get the address associated with your number. An approximate location is also received when calling from a cell phone. However, there are situations when texting may be the better option, such as if you're deaf, hard of hearing, or have difficulty speaking. Or you're in a situation when it's not safe to call 911 for help, such as if there's an intruder in your home who may overhear, or if you're having a medical emergency, such as choking, when you can't speak on the phone. So how does text to 911 work? Just enter the numbers 911 in the To field without any dashes. Give the location and nature of your emergency. Then send the text message and respond to the dispatcher's questions in reply and follow any instructions given. Do not use abbreviations, acronyms, or emojis, and be aware there could be a data charge. Similar to 911 calls, texting to 911 is for emergencies only.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
As the Supreme Court stands poised to overturn Roe v. Wade and allow states to ban or restrict abortion, San Diego State Senator Tony Atkins has introduced Senate Constitutional Amendment 10, which would protect women's rights to access abortion and contraception in California. Senator Atkins says SCA 10 will safeguard our ability to make decisions about our bodies and access critical health care for generations to come. The amendment will reinforce that in California, these are private medical discussions between the patient and their health care provider and should be based on scientific fact, not political agenda, she adds. Over a dozen bills have been introduced in California's legislature aimed at protecting or expanding reproductive rights here just in the past few months. That stands in sharp contrast to many states that have trigger laws, which will make most or all abortions illegal if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. Some other states have bills pending that would severely restrict access to abortion and even birth control. SCA 10 will be heard by a policy committee in the coming days and must then be passed by a two-thirds majority in both the state Senate and Assembly by June 30th. Next, it would go to voters, who can pass it with a simple majority vote in the November election. By placing abortion and control rights into the state's constitution, no future state legislature could easily overturn those rights without going back to the voters. But even a constitutional amendment at the state level may not guarantee abortion and birth control access if Republicans regain control of Congress in a future election. Some Republican representatives have pledged to push for congressional action to ban abortion nationwide, no longer leaving the matter up to individual states. Congress could, in theory, also take action to protect abortion rights nationwide, as House Democrats have tried to do, but the measure lacks support in the Senate, where Republicans have enough votes to prevent passage. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
A fun place to visit in El Cajon is the Water Conservation Garden. Located on the Cuyamaca College campus, this garden is fully surrounded with flowers, plants, ponds, wildlife, and educational interactives. It's a place for both children and adults to enjoy and learn about water-wise gardening, fire-resistant landscaping, native plants, and vegetable gardens.
The garden is a flurry of activities. We have workshops here of every kind about your landscape, about making cheese, crafting classes.
Not only is this park a great place to visit, but it has an important mission behind its purpose. Director of Operations and Programs Pam Meisner emphasized the focus of the garden is to educate on eco-friendly and efficient gardening. Miss Smarty Plants is one of the workshop programs she runs for kids.
I think the best part about being Miss Smarty Plants is that I get to see the innocence, the wonder of a child every day. I truly believe in my heart of hearts, our youth is going to save the earth.
The garden offers field trips for kids, yoga classes, and other events depending on the season, but is also a pleasant and relaxing place to walk amid a beautiful environment.
Once you know it's here and once you come here, you don't have to sell the garden. It sells itself.
Because this is a nonprofit organization, the garden's finances took a hit, causing it to require a submission fee for entry as opposed to being free.
We used to be a totally free garden. We changed to an admissions model in June when we were able to open back up.
The Water Conservation Garden is open Tuesday to Sunday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and open until 6 p.m. on Thursdays. For more information about the exciting and enjoyable things the Water Conservation Garden has to offer, visit the website at thegarden.org.
Miss Smarty Plant's mantra is, we can change the world with our own two hands.
And for East County Magazine, I'm Angela Kurish.
The County Fire Department has reached new heights with the grand opening of the county's highest elevation fire station in early May at an elevation of around 6,000 feet. County Fire, Cal Fire, and the community of Mount Laguna celebrated the completion of the new station. Supervisor Joel Anderson says he's thankful for the firefighters and staff who keep our county safe, adding, I am hopeful that this strategically placed fire station will help them do just that. The building is shared with the County Department of Public Works crews, who are responsible for maintaining roads, including plowing snow and clearing debris after storms. Laguna Station 49 has 5,000 feet of floor space. It includes area for two fire trucks, sleeping quarters for six firefighters, a living area, kitchen, office space, and a gym to keep those firefighters fit. There is also a second-story balcony so the firefighters can enjoy the outdoor environment. The station was built using fire-resistive materials since it is in a high wildfire risk area. It's the site of the 1970 Laguna Fire, which burned 175,425 acres, killed 8 civilians, and destroyed 382 homes. Mount Laguna is also where the destructive 2013 Chariot Fire burned over 7,000 acres and destroyed about 120 structures, including the historic Sierra Club Lodge and the Albar Shriners Camp. The new station has lighting systems to maintain light pollution standards of the International Dark Sky Association so that it won't impede research at the nearby Mount Laguna Observatory near the station. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. On May 13th, the grand opening of Ildica County Park in Spring Valley took place. It's located at the corner of Ildica Street and Sweetwater Road, and it's now open to the public 7 days a week from sunrise to sunset. The new park is about half an acre, and it includes a play area, exercise equipment, and a 20-plot community garden. The park was created to give Spring Valley families and residents a new space to play, grow food in the community garden, exercise, meet others, and enjoy nature. On the ground are planted 22 native trees, including 5 live oaks and 17 sycamores, which will eventually provide shade, support wildlife, and help grow San Diego's tree canopy. All the plants at the park are native species, and they're drought-tolerant. The grand opening included a gardening demo, a walkthrough of the park with the park ranger, and a ribbon cutting. The presentation was kicked off by Brian Albright, director of the county's Department of Parks and Recreation, along with the chair and vice chairs of the County Board of Supervisors, Nathan Fletcher and Nora Vargas. Supervisor Fletcher, whose redrawn district now includes land adjacent to the park, spoke on the values of recreational areas and gave a preview of some new recreational programs yet to come to help families get out and enjoy the outdoors.
Let's get out and play. There is such a value to getting out and playing. And whether you're going to sit there and play chess or checkers, or you're going to go over and do a couple pull-ups and get a little workout, or the little ones are going to come. Between my wife and I, we have 5. But I think it's the place where we come together as community. And you know, if you make the mistake of opening social media or watching the news, it is so divisive right now. But when you go out and you actually talk to someone and you see them, right, you realize even if you have some differences in who you vote for or where you go, there's still a lot more that holds us together. And that is our love of our kids and our families and our community. And I think you see that when you have the opportunities to come out to locations like this. So I am thrilled to be here. I know y'all been waiting. I was talking to Veronica and John, and they're like, we've been waiting. for like 20 years since I bought the land. Well, we got there about, I got there about 3 years ago, and we voted and we funded it, and now it's here today. And we're excited about that and really value the partnership with San Miguel High School. Appreciate you all. And the community garden, a vital component of what we're doing. So there is a whole lot to love about what's happening right here. And the final thing I'll say is keep posted for what Brian and his team are doing. We've got hands down the best parks department in the entire state of California. Hands down, not even close. And we're going to have, this is our 13th community park in the last 3 years. Our 13th new community park in the last 3 years. And one thing we're really going to highlight this year is a lot of our regional parks. We want to get you out taking a day trip out to one of our regional parks. Come go for a hike, camp, fish, come out and kayak a little bit, climb a rock, a little rock climbing. And so we're going to do a lot of work for how we can help, you know, get you transported out there. And you know, I think a lot about my mom, early's kind of single mom, the notion that she could just go camping when she'd never been camping before. It was daunting. But you know what? We got all the stuff you need to go camping. We got tents and sleeping bags and stoves. And so you know what? We'll give it all to you. And we'll give you a ranger to help you set it up. We want people to have that first time experience in our regional park. So with that, I'm going to quit talking about parks and let's get this thing officially opened and kick it off. And Brian, thank you to you and your incredible team and everything we got going on.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.